B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
All I can say is, wow, what a great conversation with drummer Phil Barone today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. The topics are many. We talk about Saigon Kick, how they got their name, this time with that band, as well as retirement and some of the rumors and mistruths that are out there on the internet.
Well, you know what happens is it's like anything else. We have social media. And with social media, there are certain like hack sites that make up stuff so they can, you know, try to get people to click on them.
He told me he's going to finish up this tour with the Red Dragon Cartel and then go into retirement. But I asked him about working with Jake E. Lee.
Working with Jake has been one of the greatest experiences, and I'm honored and grateful to work with someone, a genius like him.
Don't worry about him slowing down during retirement. He's writing books and horror movies and sitcoms. We talk about his past addictions, reality television, and who did he say this about?
He's just a joke. So that kind of put the bad taste in my mouth.
Drummer Phil Barone is my guest today on Talkin' Rock.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Big thank you for checking out the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. Also, a big thank you to the Anvil Radio Show. Thanks for the review on iTunes. I remember Meltdown when he was on a little AM radio station in Buffalo called 14X Rebel Radio. That I was. And then later on 103.3 The Fox. Legendary broadcast voice. His interviews are always entertaining and informative. Keep it metal. Do appreciate the review. Also, Lore 101, enjoy the show, like the old show also. The old show was Radio Chatter. We kind of switched things around a few months ago. But thank you guys so much for leaving those reviews and the comments. And you can leave a 5-star rating if you like this podcast and the whole nine yards. Hey, coming up, we've got Al Beck with Rock News After Film, STP News, Woodstock News, even a really cool biopic about the documentary, I should say, about the thrash scene in San Francisco and more coming up with Al Beck. But first, Phil Barone, as I talk about in the interview with him a little bit, I just met him on Friday night, saw the Red Dragon Cartel at the Token Lounge here in the suburb of Detroit. And I met him backstage, just kind of walking around. I'm like, hey, congrats on your retirement. And we just started talking. And I said, dude, I got to get you on my podcast. And so that he did. He gave me a call. And here it is. Phil Barone today, Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. Great conversation with the drummer. Hope you guys dig this. Yes, first of all, it was really cool to meet you the other night. Thanks for taking a few minutes before the show with me.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Absolutely. I'm glad we were able to do this.
Yeah, I know that you wanted to talk about your retirement and stuff, and we will do that. But, you know, I don't know how many guys you've talked to recently or whatever, but I played Love Is On The Way when it was brand new on the radio, and that's how long I've been around.
Wow. That's been around. It, you know, what's so funny about that is I'm with my daughter right now. We're over in Georgia, and she goes to FSU in Tallahassee. So she was born when Love Is On The Way was a hit. So we were actually just talking about that just now. So it's kind of funny you brought that up. So yeah, it's been a while. And that came out in 92. So yeah.
Yeah.
So we've been around.
Yeah, there's no question. Yeah, I didn't think I'd be doing this 29 years later from the day I started. But yeah, I saw you guys on that tour in Buffalo at a place called Impacts. That's where I grew up. I moved to Detroit in 1995. But I don't know if you remember that show, but man, it was jam-packed, and you guys were like the hottest band.
Yeah, for about 15 minutes. We were pretty big, and then it went away.
Yeah, I was going to say, how much did your life change after that song became such a gigantic hit?
Yeah, you know, it was a weird time, though, because it was a double-edged sword.
Right.
Because the Saigon Kick was such a diverse band, and Love Is On The Way was not a bad song. It wasn't about that. It was just that, you know, at the time, when people heard that, they thought we were that type of band. Same thing happened to Extreme. Same thing happened to Mr. Big as well.
Yeah.
So it was this bizarre time, and then it was right before Seattle kind of took over. So it was this like kind of gray area transitional stage of music, and we kind of got caught up in it, which kind of sucked for us because Saigon Kick was as grunge can be. I mean, there's no, if you listen to the Lizard record, you know, it sounds like Soundgarden and Jane's Addiction and all those great bands that we love, but we got kind of, you know, caught up because of the ballad. So as much as it was nice that people took my calls for 2 months, I'd much rather have waited and broke the record on the grunge level, you know, so and kind of established a career. a little more than just the ballad. So that was the kind of downside of it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it opened doors, and it continued my career to this day, you know, which is 30 years later. So, you know, there's always going to be pros and cons to everything, you know, but it is what it is.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's right, I did. I kind of forgot about that, but now that you say it, it's like, oh, yeah. Hey, is it true that you guys named the band because you're watching, I don't know, TV or something one night, and somebody said there seems to be like a Saigon kick because there was all
no.
these... No, okay, that's what I've heard now.
That was just a made-up story. How it happened was is we were in a warehouse, and we were trying to come up with names, and as you know, coming up with a band name gets... so monotonous that, you know, the most ridiculous crap starts coming out of your mouth. You know, you could, and it, Motley Crue talked about it, where they're, let's call the band Christmas, you know.
Right, right.
Like that. Yeah, and that's kind of like where we were at. And somebody said Saigon Kiss, like with like Kiss. And I said, Saigon Kick? That's kind of cool. And so they go, no, Kiss. I go, no, Kick. Let's go with the Kick end. And that's how it was an accident. It was a happy accident. And that's how it usually, you know, that's how names come together. Titles, it's always a happy accident. So but we made up that story to make it Hollywood, but it really wasn't that.
All right, yeah. So there was a story floating around like that, because that's what I always heard. So.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was in I think, the press release or something. They had to make it more interesting than a bunch of idiots sitting in a warehouse throwing dumb names out. So they had to make it into like some kind of like scholarish, you know, profound statement that is, you know, a lie. So
yeah.
Either way.
That's interesting, man. Well, I met you the other day. We were talking about your retirement and stuff. And how many more weeks or how many more gigs you got left with Jakey Lee and the Red Dragon Cartel?
Well, right now we're in the U.S., so we have till April 3rd, I believe, is our last show. It's about 10 shows left. And then we go to Japan. And when we get back from Japan, I don't know. There's nothing on the books. So my commitment with Red Dragon Cartel is until Jake is done touring the Patina record. And so I really don't know. There are no shows booked as of now. However, if the opportunity comes up, you know, where we get a tour or something like that, I certainly will play. So my retirement, my farewell to drumming, which is going on, is with Patina, with the actual record and Jakey Lee. So as soon as Jake calls it a day, with this record, then that's what it is. And as of now, the only shows that are booked are what we're playing. So I really don't know.
Now, when I talked to you the other day, I mean, the first thing that came out of your mouth, I said, hey, man, congratulations on the retirement and all this stuff. And you said, man, you know, like fake news, you know, it's like not that you weren't retiring, but there was some mix up as to what was going on. You were going to finish this tour and do all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, what happens is like anything else. We have social media. And with social media, there are certain like hack sites that make up stuff so they can, you know, try to get people to click on it. And my original statement I wrote on Facebook said, this is my farewell to drumming, and I'll be, you know, finishing the Red Dragon Cartel Patina Tour 2019, and then I will retire from drumming completely, no drumming. And then a site picked it up and said and reworded it and put a headline that I left the band after 2 weeks. Because the bus broke down or whatever they wrote, you know, just hack, say crap. And that annoys me because my fan base is very cool. They're very loyal and they were shocked by this. Like, you know, I just don't like the whole, I quit after 2 weeks. I didn't do that. This is something that I've been talking to the band about for a while, you know, that I wasn't, that I didn't want to tour anymore. Also, what people don't know is that I'm a writer. I have a publishing deal. I have a literary agent, and I have a new book deal, and I'm writing a book right now, and that's what I'm doing. I write scripts and books. Nobody really knows that of me, and that's okay, and it's not something I talk about that much, but that's another reason why I have to stop playing drums. My agent has, you know, literally said, you know, you got to get off the road. I need words from you. We have deadlines and stuff. So I'm going to be able to do that after the Japanese tour, which is great. And I actually will be writing as we fly to Japan. 18 hours on a plane is perfect time to write. And I've been doing that as well. So that's really what it was. So it pissed me off, you know, when the hack sites pick up something and just basically tell lies to my fans. And I've been very upfront with my fans. I have great fans. And they know of my honesty. And a lot of fans believe what they read, you know, and, you know, that site is a joke. and it's run by a joke, you know, this poser who wishes that he was us. And instead they make up stories to kind of like slam us. And I think that's pretty pathetic. And what's even worse about it is once I read it, I personally sent him a message because I've known the guy for years, and he told me he wasn't taking it down. Oh, I'm just quoting you. So, you know, so he was just, an a-hole across the board. And he ruined a 20-year friendship over it. And quite frankly, if I see him, I'm going to knock his freaking teeth out, too. So, you know, because he needs his ass. You know, when certain people just need their ass kicked?
Right.
This idiot does. And he's one of those guys that will get it at some point.
Yeah.
You know, maybe one of my fans will get him before me. That would be even better. So, but I just can't stand that kind of crap, because he could have called me and said, hey, man, what's really going on? And I would have told him, I would have given him a scoop, you know, like I'm telling you. It's pretty simple, but they choose to, you know, print crap. So that's why I was upset when I saw you. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you weren't upset at me, and you were just kind of explaining everything. So I don't want people to think that you were like, you know, yelling at me or nothing.
Yeah. No. I mean, it just in my tone, because it was like two days of this crap, and even the band, you know, because Jake, I don't want Jake to think that the record is too good. The band is too good. This is the best record I've ever played on. And to say that I quit after 2 weeks is insulting and disrespectful to me, to Jake, to the band. And that's why it upset me so much, because I truly believe that this is one of the greatest records. And the reason why I would leave now is because it's like the Seinfeld thing. I've done everything I can do. You know, I'm not going to make a better record than what I just made. I truly stand behind that. And why not go out on top? And, you know, instead some hack poser decides that he wants to get some clicks on his website and makes up some other crap, which in turn had to have my publicist release a statement. You know, it's stuff like that.
I got you.
That just agitates you, and it doesn't have to.
Yeah. Now, in your statement about your retirement stuff, you said that drums kind of fell to the bottom of the list and stuff. You kind of lost some passion and whatnot. When did this come about? I mean, have you been kind of thinking about this for a long time or just recently, or how does this work?
Well, you know, I've been thinking about it for a while, but again, because I did this record, I really wanted to tour the record, because I really, truly love this record, and it's my best drumming in my career, and working with Jake has been one of the greatest experiences, and I'm honored and grateful to work with someone, a genius like him. I did a short couple of days with Bullet Boys, which I did quit after 2 days, because the singer is just the worst human on earth, and just a pathetic sack of garbage. And, you know, it was a joke. You know, the band draws like 20 people, and he screams and pisses and moans and tell everybody that he sold millions of records. And I'm like, I'm not going to sit out here. I'm a rock star in that sense. He's just a joke. So that kind of put the bad taste in my mouth. I'm like, is this what it's going to be? You know, like a washed up joke yelling every night because only 20 people come because no one cares about him anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And Jake wasn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
Jake is a professional. Jake is a true musician and a great, great human, unlike Mark. So it was two different things. So when I did the Bullet Boy thing, I was driving home from it, and I had my best friend in the car, and I was like, you know what? I don't know if I'm cut out for this. You know, when I was 25, it was one thing. You know, but I'm a 51-year-old man. You know, I have grown children that I want to enjoy. Like, I don't want to, you know, do this. But because it was Jake and it was that record, I wanted to at least play. And the tour that was booked was short. It was 5-6 weeks, whatever it is. And I thought that would be a good kind of amount of time to gauge if I really wanted to. And the minute we started rehearsing, you know, things hurt. You know, drums are hard. Like, we joke about it. But, you know, Neil Peart just retired because he said, if I can't play to the caliber that I played when I was younger, I don't want to play drums.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I kind of feel, because everything hurts. The tour is brutal. We happen to pick winter, which is like the worst time to tour.
Right.
Luckily, we have a tour bus, and the band is incredible. Like, between the band, this is the most fun I'm having. These guys are really great guys. We're having fun on the bus. There's no tension and weirdness. But it's all kind of wearing us out because we're older guys. You know, Anthony is from Lynch Mob, and Ace Frehley, and me with Saigon Kick and Skid Row, and of course Jake with Ozzy. We're old guys.
Mm.
You know, so it wears me out, and I have to say that I'm in pain. you know, and so when it comes down to drums, it's not that I hate drums. It's just that I, you know, right now it's just, I mean, it equates me with hurting and hassle. And I don't have the passion that I used to when I was a kid. I don't, because I've done it all already. I've done everything that I needed to do with drumming and music, and I'm pretty content. And I want to make sure that the listeners understand I'm leaving happy. I'm not angry. Like, I'm truly leaving on my own terms and very happy and excited to the next level, which is writing. My words are everything. So some of the fans are a little upset, which I understand, but it's 30 years. I mean, I've given you 30 years and with a catalog of music that I'm so very proud of and grateful to have been a part of. And now I'm going to write. And I'm going to give you something even more valuable, which is my words and very personal thoughts. And I'm hoping that people fall in love with that, because I'll write forever. You know, I'll write till I die. But for drumming, I'm just not feeling it anymore. And that doesn't mean I'm not playing well. The shows are shredding. We're having a blast. I hurt because I'm playing hard, because the fans deserve that. So they are never going to get a show that doesn't have us going full blast. But those shows are a toll on us and me personally, and it's kind of shocking. And that's another thing too. You know, I'm not old. I'm not young anymore. So the realization of being old is kind of, you know, set in as well. And I think it's a good time.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. First of all, you said Neil Peart. Thank you very much, because people sometimes call him Neil Peart, and that, like, rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah.
And secondly, you know, I was thinking about this year and I was watching you guys on stage, that I saw Jakey Lee in the first concert I ever went to on January 28th, 1984, on the Bark of the Moon tour, and I haven't seen him since until Saturday night. Can you believe that?
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. And I saw that same tour. I was out in the audience because Motley Crue was opening, and I saw that same tour. And, you know, 30 years later, I'm playing with him.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
It's a cool business in that respect.
I was going to say, what's it like to be behind Jake every single night?
Well, you know, it took me a week of auditions even for him to say yes to it. But Jake is like the nicest, coolest, non-ego person, just a good human being. He's a great human. Like, I can't explain how great of a guy that he is. And his talent is so extraordinary that you forget how great he is. And then he'll just rip into, like, Bark at the Moon, and you go, oh, that's what it's supposed to sound like. And then it dawns on you, holy crap, I'm playing with Jakey Lee. And then you get, like, nervous and intimidated for a second. So it's a really funny thing, because you kind of forget it because you're hanging out with him and you're, you know, he's just Jake. But then he rips into it and you're like, I was playing that in my bedroom. You know, like, I wanted to be a rock star listening to that, and now I get to hear it because he's playing it in front of me. So it's actually kind of very cool, and I'm very grateful. He's one of the best guitar players in the world by far.
He's
sick.
He's sick. Yeah, it's a crazy world that you and I get to live in. And, you know, sometimes I'll get, you know, listen, I grew up in a little town outside of Buffalo in BFE, and my friends will text me. I just had a text just a few minutes ago because I talked to Bret Hart today. And I can't believe you talked to Bret Hart. You know, it's like, you know, it's just kind of cool, the things that we get to do in this lifetime, in this business. But so you talked about the books. Now, you've, of course, written books before based on your life and stuff. Yeah. But the books that you're going to be writing are kind of like novels and scripts and stuff, right?
Yeah, the first book I released was just a funny book written in kind of a stand-up way, because I did stand-up comedy and stuff. So I wrote it in a very comedic way. It was called Unfiltered, and it was just stupid road stories and dumb, you know, like day-to-day comedy. I called it a four dumper, meaning you could take four crafts and read it. That's how long it would take. It's just a fun, quick read. The stuff that I've been writing now are novel. I'm writing a book right now about my father and his battle with cancer that's hoping to help others as well. I wrote a couple of sitcoms. I have a screenplay right now, a couple of horror movie screenplays as well that I'm writing. The funny part about writing is that it lies dormant, and it has. Then all of a sudden, it's like it comes out of you like a volcano, and that's how it's going. So people ask me, like, how can you write four books? Well, easy. I sit down and just write it because it's coming out. So on any given day, I could be writing a piece for each book. And it just, you know, it's just, that's how my crazy brain works. It's called the rotten brain for a reason. And that's how it works. So that's, so the next book that's coming out is the one It's called The Horses Have Left the Stable, and it's about the cancer and my father. And it's sad, but it's not, because I talk about my family and my father. My family has a very funny past, bank robbers and mobsters and really interesting folks that I researched and my father told me about. So it's going to be a lighthearted book, but on the same token, you know, talking about, you know, something is cancer, that's sad, but I tried to put a little comedic twist on it, but it's something special. So I'm really looking forward to finishing that and getting that out. But that's the one that I'm working on right now.
Now, you said sitcoms and horror movies in like one sentence. Yeah. So how far along are you? Like, I'm a big, like, kind of horror movie fan, like, you know, Rob mm-hmm. Zombie and whatnot. How far are you along with that?
Well, that one, there's one in particular that I'm writing right now that I would love Rob to direct. It would be right up his alley. It's a really interesting movie. It's crazy. Yeah, but that one's done. I mean, that's, yeah.
Really?
And I have a sitcom about a band called Washed Up that's done. I wrote that one 10 years ago, and I rewrote it recently. There's quite a few actually done, to be honest with you. They're ready to go at any point. In fact, I just sent one of the scripts to a director friend of mine, and he just could, because nobody knows that I write. And when, you know, they just think I'm like a caveman back there swinging at the tubs, and I actually can write. And so there's going to be stuff coming out. I'm looking forward to the fans getting a hold of this stuff and going, whoa, holy crap. But right now I write for a magazine called Full Access Magazine, which is something, is a magazine out of Tampa, but you can also go online, fullaccess.com, fullaccessmagazine.com. I write a monthly column called Unfiltered. So you can read, you know, whatever my crazy brain comes up with monthly in that. And that's what I write now on the side. And so as I'm writing the book. So as soon as I get done with this tour, I'll be, you know, hitting it hard as far as writing is concerned. And I'm hoping that this book comes out sometime this year. You know, it's really up to me. I have to write it. So, you know, but my commitment right now with Red Dragon is taking the priority. So we'll see how it all works out.
Right. Now, in the past, of course, you know, it's no, you know, secret that you fought your battles and stuff, drugs and alcohol and different things like that. I mean, are you totally, it sounds like you're sober now and you just have all this stuff that wants to flood out of your brain.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the first time I'm touring, like, no drugs, no chicks, no drinking, no nothing. I'm just writing. I'm writing and drumming. It's a really strange concept to me. But it's also, you know, I'm seeing the reality, because, you know, when I was loaded or hanging out with chicks, you forget about time and you don't even know. But now it's like I'm aware that I'm sitting on a bus board of, you know, waiting to go play a show or whatever the case is. And it's a little different touring this way. However, I'm clear minded and I'm able to write. So that's what it's about. I did what I had to do already, you know, drug wise and all that stuff. And a lot of it was self-medicating because of the death of my mother. You know, like, look, we all have this story. I'm not going to get, you know, down on it. But the point is that we go in directions, and that was a time, and now is a different time. And, you know, so, and with that is, again, why the retirement side of it pops up, because it's a different time now. That's a different mindset. I'm 30 years older and have other things that are more important than chasing girls or doing drugs. So.
Yeah. I've talked to, I can't begin to tell you the amount of rock stars I've talked to about their sobriety and stuff. You know, one that always kind of sticks with me is my friend Brad from Three Doors Down, who says he was just drinking on tour because he was bored. And you just kind of mentioned that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's boredom. I remember George Carlin talking about doing cocaine. He goes, no, I wasn't addicted to cocaine. It was just a habit. I was bored and decided to put a bump up my nose every 20 minutes. He goes, and then I decided I didn't want to. And then I stopped. You know, it's pretty simple. It's basic stuff. You know, like, I'm not, you know, downgrading drug use. It's awful. But I'm saying most of it is, you know, you want to escape, or you're bored, and you know, or you'll drink because you guys drink around you. You know, my guys drink in the band. I don't. I'm okay with that. And they don't push it on me. You know, they don't bother me. That they're very respectful to that, and as I am with them. I don't care, what you do around me. Just don't push it on me, and respect my boundary. And they do, and it's great. It's fine. So, I have no problems with that.
Now, you just talked about chasing the girls and stuff. It's written that you banged 3,000 women. Are you sure it wasn't like 865 and you just lost count? Is that?
It could be 20. Who the hell knows? I don't know. I think that was that number was good for television when I was on Oprah.
Yeah.
It was like, let's get a good number. Who the hell? Could be 10,000. I really don't know, sadly, because it was just a time. But, so it's anybody's guess, is the point. And, again, it's the past. That was the time. And, I lived a life. I've always said that on my deathbed, I never want to go, damn, I just wish I would have. And at this point, I'm good. I'm content with life. And right now, I just want to breathe. That's my main thing is breathing and not being in pain and doing something I enjoy and spending time with my kids. My daughter and I just now got matching tattoos.
Really?
Which is great. Yeah, we just left the tattoo shop. And I'm going to post it on Instagram in a little bit. But, yeah, that's what we did today. You know, like it was a spur-of-the-moment thing. And she goes, Dad, let's get some tats. Why not? You know, I mean, I'm enjoying life, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, that's great, man. That's really awesome. You know, like I never met you before until the other night, and I found you super engaging and candid. And just the 3-5 minutes, whatever we talked to, I'm like, I got to get you to talk on my show here, so.
Well, I appreciate that. And you know, that's the way life is. And that's why I get upset when people make up stuff. Because you know what? You just ask me. I'll tell you the truth. I got nothing to hide. I'm not embarrassed about anything. You can Google me and see my past. And probably 90% of it is true. You know, I mean, it is what it is. If you're going to judge me from my past, then so be it. If you want to talk to me like a human, you probably will find me engaging because I find people engaging, too. I give respect to people regardless. And I don't judge. So if you don't do that, if you don't judge me and you give me your respect, I'll talk all day with you. We'll be fine friends. You know, like that's how I roll these days. I don't get caught up in so much of the garbage. I do correct it, though. I get upset if I see something wrong, and I'm very outspoken about it. And I certainly understand the ramifications from it. You know, if you put something out there, it's going to come back. And that's why when something false comes out, I immediately want to correct it. So I appreciate you allowing me to come on and talk about it as well. You know, and that's what it's about.
Well, sure. I thought I'd give you a little bit of a bullhorn here. Hey, you just said 90% of the stuff that you read is true. So, I mean, give me something that may have been written or something. You're like, holy crap, I can't believe this, outside of what we just talked about a few minutes ago.
There was some stuff written about that I actually had to sue somebody over and won years ago that was on the internet. And, you know, you find haters, too. So, you know, people want to come out from under the rock and start talking crap about you. We live in a world now that nobody understands what's real anymore because we have a president that's, you know, lies, and we have a government that lies, and we have news that's 24 hours that lies. It's like nobody's telling the truth across the board. So I just live in reality, and I can only do me. I can only handle me. So if you're going to call me an a-hole, I'll probably agree with you. If you're going to say that I had sex with an animal, I'm going to sue you. You know, like that's the difference of it. You know, you can't sue over an opinion, but you can sue if somebody is trying to make up stuff about you. And that's when I put my foot down. So, you know, and that's it. But basically, you know, somebody saying, well, I know you're a drug addict. I'm like, yeah, I am. Actually, I put a documentary out. Well, you know, you were in the adult business. Well, yeah, I was. I directed adult movies. So, you know, like there's no scandal in the truth is what I'm trying to say.
Sure.
You know, so, you know, I lived a life. So most of the stuff you're going to read, you know, you might not agree with, you know, directing adult movies or my swinger lifestyle or posing for Playgirl or having a toy company make a toy out of my penis, whatever. You know, you may not agree with it, but I did it. So, well, how does it affect you? I think people need to just stay the hell out of everyone's business. That's all. And, you know, glass houses. Until the skeletons are out of your closet, don't look at mine, because there's many in mine. But I tell you about mine. You know, like, that's the thing. But you can't make judgment on people when you have a lot of things that could be judged about you. And I think we're in a world where everybody's quick to jump on people. And, you know, if they took a look at themselves in the mirror, they would go, yeah, maybe I'll shut up about this. You know, because, and that's how it is. So, And that's the world we live in. And I'm also in a business like you that you're out there. So you can easily, somebody can attack you right now on his social media. I heard you do an interview with Verone. You're this, and this. You know, like that's what people do.
Right.
So how you handle that as an individual, I've learned to handle it. In the old days, I would go off the deep end and make myself look even stupider. You know, like I don't engage with that. I let them be. Because people like that, they get their thrill out of engagement, of being acknowledged. And I don't acknowledge that. That's why even with this story, I called the guy directly. I didn't do it online, but then I had to put a statement. Since there are hack websites and posers, this is my statement now, so the fans know what's going on. But I asked him properly, so there wouldn't have been any social media. But they chose not to. I always give the person the right, the choice to make the right choice, you know?
Right.
And when they don't, then I have to attack. And my favorite author always says, never piss off a writer because we can describe you. And that's what we can do. And we will cut you apart with words to the point that you won't even know it. You don't even know if you're coming or going. And I don't want to be that cruel, but if I need to be, I certainly will. That's how I feel, you know, because I do have to protect what's left. And a man only has his damn dignity and his word. That's all you got, you know. So they could say, you know, that guy was a real a-hole, but damn, you know, he did have his word. I'll give him that, you know. That's what I'm looking at these days. That's how I run through life.
Now you talk about, like, you know, the website and some of the places, you know, maybe giving you a bad rap. So you did some reality television. Did they give you a fair shake when you watched it over?
Yeah, because I knew what they were shooting.
Okay.
I mean, I knew what I was up against. I knew that producers were trying to make a story out of things. So I played them, actually. I got more camera time than all of them. Than the whole cast, because I knew how they edit. You know, being someone who directs movies and is part of editing, I understand what they do. It's pretty simple, and I understand what they are shooting for and how they agitate things, and I never got agitated. So I allowed the house to kind of collapse around me, and I stood tall, you know? And I knew exactly, and they tapped into my mom's death, so which would, you know, got me upset. And apparently a rock star crying on TV, the chick's dig. So I actually came out of that okay. You know, I was all right. But yeah, look, you get on a reality show, what the hell you think it is? You know, it's a circus. And if there's nothing going on, who the hell wants to watch?
Right.
They're going to create the scenarios. That's why those shows do so well. And then there's others that are people just bored with. And ours, they were kind of bored with ours because no one really had drama. They were just, it was a weird show. I think they used the wrong blueprint. But nonetheless, it's like I just utilized it for what it was and did it, you know. So it is what it is.
Yeah, a friend of mine years ago who sat next to me in homeroom when I was in high school, way back in the Stone Age, he actually got into reality television. He told me years ago, he goes, dude, there's nothing real about reality television. That's why I was wondering if they had manipulated anything that you'd done.
Yeah, they did. They asked us to do certain things, of course. They asked us to say certain words to set up the scene. You know, they're shooting 24/7. So at any point, they will capture things. But there was a point where the producers were just coming up to us and going, look, we need to cover this subject. So can somebody say this? Can another person not like this? So they were setting it up. It's a script. It's unscripted and scripted at the same time. I'm not going to say that there was a script involved. There wasn't. It was very much, but there was definitely some nudging, you know, and because you have to get a story. I don't blame the producers. You have to get a story. You know, like if there's nothing going on, we need something. That's your reality TV for you.
All right, Phil, well, I'll tell you what, last thing here for you, you've been really gracious with your time and super happy to talk to you. So, you know, you just talked about, you know, your addictions and all this other stuff, but even, you know, the retirement from drums and you kind of, you know, you found that moment. What was the moment that, you know, you decided that really helped you to kick the addictions, and what kind of advice would you give to other rock stars that are trying to do the same thing?
Yeah, you know, there's really no, it's so weird. People who are drug addicts and alcoholics like myself, you know, until you're ready to be helped, there's no help. Unfortunately, today, pharmaceuticals are getting involved, so it's a little different than when I was, you know, really doing drugs where you had a dealer come over. Now your dealer is CVS, I mean, technically. So it's a very hard thing. I never got into heroin and pills and stuff like that, so I understand that it's the addiction end of it is sickening and can cause death. For me, it was I just was sick of it, and I just wanted to be healthy, and I was ready, and I admitted I have an issue. So, you know, admitting is the hardest thing, even in life. You know, admitting whether you're a drug addict or you broke the window or, you know, you kicked the dog, you have to admit shit. You have to see your part in things. And until you do that, you're going to fail. So the problem is that when you see your part in it, what you're going to get from it, you're not going to like. You have to be ready. Brace yourself for the bad, because it doesn't get good until the bad. Mm-hmm. The bad comes through and then the good will start. That I promise you. But you have to be ready and brace yourself. And a lot of people don't want to. And I've helped many friends, and I have good people around me that helped others. But, you know, I went to rehab more than once. So it's not like it's a constant thing. You know, it's something you work on. But you have to be ready to do it and know that it's not going to be pleasant. But then it will. You know, it will be. Once your addict brain stops convincing you that you need to be high, and then all of a sudden you're like, holy crap, I have money in my bank account? Wait a minute, I can actually drive today and go to the store and be human? You'd be amazed. You know, there was times I didn't leave my house for weeks. And I'm like, what date is it? One time, let me tell you this, I was partying one time so much that I didn't leave my house that I went outside and there was a new fast food restaurant right down across. And I was like, when the hell did they build this? That's how much you can party, you know? So it's weird. And, but you know, my advice is that when you're ready to get help, there's a lot of great things out there, a lot of great people that'll help you. And one thing I want to say about this tour that's been so cool for me is that with all this noise that's going on in the United States and all this stuff that's dividing us as Americans, one thing that we do have in favor, in common, I should say, is music. And if we look at each other and find the common ground more than what we hate about each other, you realize that we have a lot in common. But I have met nothing but the nicest folks all the way through the United States, starting in PA through, you know, Wyoming and you know, Nevada and Utah and all these wonderful people. We were in North Carolina yesterday. I was walking through a Walmart and everybody was saying hello and asking questions and being polite and nice. It was just a really nice thing. So believe it or not, no matter what's going on the airwaves and all that friggin' noise, there are some really great people out there. Yeah. And if you say hello to someone, you're probably going to meet someone nice, you know, because I have been. And that's been a pleasure. It truly has. And I'm enjoying that aspect of it, because the minute you think, you know, you've lost hope in humanity because you see the same crap over and over and over, you just got to walk outside and turn the noise off. And like, you're going to find someone nice. And you're going to go, yeah. All right. Nice. You know, there is nice people, because there really is out there. So that's all I wanted to say on that. I'm just having a good time with that.
Well, that's exactly how this interview got placed, because right away when I met you, I don't know if I felt a connection, but I felt, man, I'd love to talk to this guy because he seems like a nice guy. I'd like to tell his story a little bit. So.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. And, you know, like anything else, we put a mic in front of a drummer, we don't shut up. You know, we're in the back just hitting stuff. Nobody wants us to talk. So when we get a chance, we don't shut up. I mean, that's the whole thing. But I appreciate that, man. I really do, because that means a lot to me. And I treat my fans the same way, you know, with respect and give them the time. And it's important, you know, in this day and age. If someone gives me the time to say hello, well, I have the time to say hello back and have some conversation. I'm not that busy, nor am I that important. So,
well, I appreciate that, man. Hey, listen, Phil, good luck in the rest of the tour here in your retirement. Maybe sometime down the road after your books and all this other stuff, we can do this again. You can talk about what you got going on. I'd love to see some of the horror stuff and the sitcoms and all the other stuff come to life as well.
Me too. I'm with you on that. So it's a date, because that will be a great time. You'll hear a happy guy when all that stuff comes out. I'm looking forward to that. I appreciate it.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
That was a fun interview with drummer Phil Verone, and I'll tell you what, man, pretty candid, pretty good stuff right there from Phil. So hopefully that clears up some of the stuff, because then there's been a lot of garbage out there on the interweb and that regarding his retirement. So there you have that. Hey, it's Meltdown here, joined alongside by Al Beck, who apparently thinks he's just going to get paid for not being here.
I was going to say, speaking of garbage on the interweb, here I am.
There you are. Where have you been, man? Looking all over the place for the last two episodes of the pod, and you're like, MIA.
Well, it happens.
I guess.
I'm all over town.
I got to be honest, we had a lot of listens the last two, so maybe.
That's why we call this the Rock News headlines that you can take or leave.
Yeah, you can just take it, leave it. It doesn't really matter. Yeah, well. But anyways, he's back, thankfully.
Yeah.
And, with some Rock News today on Stone Temple Pilots and Duff McKagan, Woodstock. Even we'll throw in a little kicker at the end with a revamped movie.
Sure.
Actually, number three coming up here. But first, STP, Jeff Coot, the singer from STP, is a local guy, and he's been kicking around the Detroit area for decades, and finally caught on with the guys from STP after being on that TV show. What was that show he was on?
Was that the Voice or America's Talent
or something like that?
X Factor? I don't know. I get them all mixed up.
I know.
Up.
Yeah. I know.
They're all just American Idol.
Yes. Yeah.
You know?
Ish. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So, he was on TV, and he's a hell of a singer.
Yeah, there's a good dude as well. So yeah, he got the gig with STP a couple years ago, and he was talking to our very own Screamin' Scott on the radio, and I guess they kind of broke a little bit of news.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I mean, I really like the way Jeff sounds with Stone Temple Pilots, and he had talked about getting comfortable with the band and kind of making it his own a little bit, and still paying homage, of course, to Scott Weiland, who's no longer with us. But I'd also seen reports that they're still kind of amped up. They're kind of working on some stuff. Well, we found out when he talked to our buddy Screamin' Scott that they are working on an acoustic record right now, which is a little different, and he said it's a little bit of a different feel for STP.
Yeah, and of course, whenever you strip something back like that, as far as the acoustic songs go, man, you know, you lose all that, what I like to call the audio wallpaper.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you really can't hide behind the big guitars and the big stacks and the loud drums and stuff, so now it's just you out there and in front of everybody, so we'll see how that sounds.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. There's a buddy of mine who is a local musician, and we were talking about. I remember the first time I met him, we were at some bar gig or something, and he ripped out Eruption flawlessly, and I was like, hey, dude, I mean, you caught my attention. And he goes, that's all effects, man. He goes, I'm a musician. I'm not a musician, I'm a musician. You know, I like that.
Yeah, that does happen from time to time. When you can sit there and watch a band that strips it back to just the acoustics, you know, just the acoustic stuff, it's like, that's really the true mark of a good musician.
Mm-hmm.
So,
or a musician.
Exactly. Musician, yeah. So, anyways, there's this documentary. Of course, there's been all sorts of documentaries or rocker men, you know, biopics, you know, between, the one you haven't seen yet about Queen to the, to the one about, Motley Crue that's coming out as we record this tomorrow on Netflix. Looking forward to that. But there's this documentary featuring the Thrash from the Bay Area, looks
that's
like.
That's right.
Huh?
Yeah, anyone who, this really speaks to me because I like heavy metal. It's kind of my forte. And, of course, those old Thrash bands from the Bay Area, that's my bread and butter right there. We're talking Metallica, we're talking Megadeth, Slayer, Anthrax.
There's the big four right there.
There's the big four, but Testament, Exodus, another one of my favorites, Death Angel, and plenty more because is involved in this documentary. Features a common narration by Brian Posehn, the comedian.
Oh, yeah.
Who's a big comic book nerd and a big metalhead, and so he's going to be narrating the whole thing. And it's featuring over 50 interviews with different bands. I just named a few of them, but it's called Murder in the Front Row, the San Francisco Bay Area Thrash Metal Story. And it's getting a premiere in San Francisco on April 20th. I can't seem to locate where can we see it after the premiere, but obviously it'll be eventually on home release, streaming something, you know, but that's kind of cool. I like this.
Yeah, it says that a lot of these Northern California kids love bands like UFO, Maiden, Motorhead, all that kind of stuff. And that all kind of worked into making this San Francisco Bay thrash scene kind of thrive. And like you mentioned, you got the big four, Metallica, Megadeth, Slayer, and Anthrax. And then, you know, these other bands, you know, Exodus and Testament, Death Angel. I had a chance to hang out with Mark from Death Angel a couple years ago. He is one of the nicest guys.
Yeah.
You think Death Angel, you know, but this is like, you know, they're kind of more like an Iron Maiden type band, you know, and I really like them a lot. So it's good to see those guys get their due as well. But speaking of all sorts of bands, we're talking about Woodstock now, the 50th anniversary. I'm old enough to remember not the first Woodstock. Woodstock 94, which I was at. But now Woodstock, the 50th anniversary is coming up, and they're going back to the roots with some of the artists that actually a couple of artists that were actually there.
Yeah, of course. You know, they've got the full lineup finally set in stone here. And, you know, there's a big variety of different acts and some that, you know, maybe we're not as interested in, maybe like a Miley Cyrus, a Jay-Z, Imagine Dragons. Yeah,
oh,
dude.
Man, Miley Cyrus?
I know. But here's something that, in particular, these two acts, Robert Plant's going to be there and Greta Van Fleet.
Yeah, there you go. Maybe they'll do a little duet or something.
That would be pretty awesome, actually. But
I think that the conversation went like this to the guys from Greta. Hey, do you guys want to do this Woodstock 50 concert? Yeah, sure. What's Woodstock?
Yeah, exactly.
So here's the thing I was thinking about, too. It's like nowadays in this like watered down corporate, you know, you got to have the Jay-Z's and the Miley's and all. You know, that's not how that concert was back in the day. And it wasn't how it was back in the 90s either. They didn't bring in all these pop acts and stuff. It's like make it a rock festival.
Yeah, and it's all over the place. It's a 3-day festival. I mean, you got the Raconteurs on there, some newer acts like this Fever 333 that's been pretty hot.
That's cool.
Dorothy's going to be there.
Cool.
You know, and that's all just from the first day. You know, Greta Van Fleet's not there until day two. You know, you got other guys like, you know, Portugal the Man's going to be there. You know, it's a pretty hefty lineup. Rival Sons on day two.
Well, there is some rock bands. Okay.
Yeah, so there's definitely some rock bands. There's some pop. There's, you know, a little bit of everything. But, August 16th, 17th, and 18th, the full lineup for Woodstock 50 is available.
All right. And then where exactly is that going to be? Because I think I heard something on the other day about something at Watkins Glen, which is like a couple hours away.
Yeah.
From where the actual Woodstock
was. Yeah, Watkins Glen, New York, yeah.
Yeah, Watkins Glen is awesome. Is it going to be at the racetrack? No, we're not sure. Well, we'll figure that out. Anyways, Watkins Glen is at the bottom of the Seneca Lake, which is the biggest of the lakes, of the Finger Lakes, they call them.
Yeah.
And it's just a really, really, really beautiful part of not only New York, but part of the country. So I thought
we learned our lesson about asking me follow-up questions.
Sorry about that. That is true. It was a lot easier last week when you weren't here, to be quite honest with you. So, Duff McKagan is, he's got some stuff getting ready to unload in the world. Of course, Slash. His record came out a few months back, and nothing as far as Guns N' Roses is concerned, but what's the deal with Duff? Can I ask you that? I'm not sure.
We did mention Duff McKagan was working on some solo stuff, and we've got a release date now for Tenderness, which is coming out here May 31st. He did also release a new single called Chip Away, if you'd like to check that out.
Okay, and that's with Duff, as we wait for new Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
We'll have to put all this stuff together, and hopefully something comes out on the other end. But anyways, and finally, Bill and Ted 3, that's going to be a release. Now, you said, just like with, do you ever watch movies, by the way? Just curious.
I watch a lot of movies. Yeah, these ones are, Bill and Ted, probably too new. I like old movies.
Yeah, old movies, yeah. Listen, if it doesn't have anything with the word Marvel in the title, you don't want to see it. Yeah,
there is a dead zone in movies that I watch, because I watch stuff from the 40s and the 50s, and then there's like this dead zone, and then there's new movies.
Yeah.
You know, like right in the middle, and Bill and Ted just kind of fell in there.
Yeah, Bill and Ted came out back in the 80s, and you know, that's where Excellent came from, you know, and the whole thing. So
yeah, I'm aware of it. I've just, believe it or not, have never seen Bill or Ted, but they did.
It's called Bill and Ted, by the way.
Whatever.
I haven't seen either one, yeah.
But I know it was kind of back and forth, though, where it wasn't a little shaky there that they were going to do this third movie, it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, they've been talking about it, but the original guys are in it, Keanu Reeves and the other guy who didn't do anything.
And the other guy, and you can see Keanu and the other guy, August 21st, 2020 is the confirmed release date.
Oh, okay, so next year, August 21st. All right, there you go. Well, perfect. I guess you'll be seeing it. You'll have to go on a Bill and Ted marathon.
I will. Maybe I'll get to that Queen movie by then.
That might be the first marathon you ever do.
Yeah.
All right, dude, give your socials. Let's go.
At Albeck Radio, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
All right, at Meltdown WRIF, as well as at Talkin' Rock with one. Hope you guys dig this interview today with Phil Verone. Really good stuff from Phil. And if you've made it this far, I think it deserves like a 5-star rating or write a review as well. We appreciate those, like the one I read earlier today. So in the meantime, thank you so much for listening to Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. And we've got some more guests lined up. We'll do it again real soon. Keep checking back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.